through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, you guys, if you're just now joining us, we were talking about the defense, but we're switching gears following a report from Michael Silver. If you've been sticking with us, you already know what it is. But if not, Michael Silver tweeting that John and Pete are going to be, well, here's what he said. We should have some clarity on the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider soon, hopefully today. That tweet was from 28 minutes ago. What's it mean? What's clarity? What are their futures? What's at stake? What changes could be made? I mean, is it structure? Is it personnel? What's happening? So we're going to talk about that and some other Seahawks news with Seattle Times Seahawks reporter Bob Condotta, who joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Bob, I'll start with the very first and most obvious question, which was, is your assumption that Schneider and Carroll, and has it been that they'll remain here in Seattle?
Yeah, it has been. If there's something new going on, nobody seems to know about it other than, Michael Silver, I guess, at the moment anyway. So, just doing some checking around and I haven't heard of anything significantly new going on at all, with John and Pete and the guys at the top. Now, obviously, you got 27 guys or whatever on a coaching staff, so there's probably going to be some changes somewhere throughout the staff. I mean, there are every single year, when either guys leave on their own or whatever. So, there could definitely be some change, somewhere in the whole thing. But at the top, Pete was, trying to be, I guess, as clear as he could be on Friday with saying what he's always kind of said about being in great shape and all of that. But on Monday, and also said that on Sunday. So at the moment, that's my assumption.
Now, if just being totally speculative here, Bob, and not anything definitive, if these two were to stay here and there were to be any real change, what would that look like? Would it be a flip of responsibilities that John Schneider could take over full personnel decisions, and Pete Carroll would be not demoted, but it would be his responsibilities
like
just solely as the head coach? I mean, we've seen that happen with Mike Holmgren before.
Yeah, it's possible. It's interesting. I mean, those guys have always talked so much about how they don't really have significant disagreements. And John, I think, has always been perceived as sort of having, the main say on what happens in the off season anyway. How it's generally been perceived is John and the personnel guys sort of have control over the 90-man roster that they take to camp. And then Pete sort of has the final say on what's the 53-man roster that you start your season with, the idea being that, Pete is the one who once they get into camp and they go through preseason games and he sees these guys in person, then he has a clear idea of what he wants as the coach. Certainly maybe there could be some subtle change there, but, I don't know that this has ever, that it's been a relationship where it's been perceived at all as if, one or the other is necessarily really forcing a lot of players or a different kind of philosophy on the other. But certainly, that could be something they could look at. I still think though, especially, I think the feeling is that, how they played the last six games once Russell sort of was getting back to being a little bit more of his normal self following the injury and things like that, the way, they got the running game going. They beat two of the three teams in the division that are going to the playoffs and played really competitively against the other one on the road. So I think they feel like they're really not that far away, despite everything. So, I don't know if the feeling in the building is the same as maybe it is on the internet in terms of the need for there being significant change.
Bob, I know that your role is just to cover the team objectively, so I'm not going to ask you, are they far away? Because there's some moves they could make. But if you were to look at a piece or two that might be required for them to actually get to a Super Bowl, what position might you be looking at?
Well, I think the pass rush, the defensive line. The defensive end rush end spot. I think they really, really need a game changing kind of player there. I'll have to start figuring out who that might be. I mean, they're not going to get, unfortunately, you know, there's a couple of really good ones coming out in the draft that they're not going to be able to get, and maybe they can swing a trade, or there's Jadeveon Clowney's a free agent again. Maybe you can go try that again.
Oh, Clowney watch. You know, Let's go.
Not Clowney watch again.
Yeah.
I was just laughing, looking at a list. I was like, this got to be like the fifth straight year he's listed as one of the top 10 free agents coming out of the season. But, I think that's the number one thing they really need. I think they need a significant kind of just game-changing kind of guy coming off the edge. You know, they were good in the interior this year. Run defense, I think they were second in the NFL in terms of yards per carry allowed on the ground, and that includes a couple of real significant kind of breakdowns maybe early in the year, but they really clamped down on that as the year went on. But to me, that would be the number one thing they'd need. And then, maybe just another really dependable receiver. I mean, we've seen that, we saw them really try to get, Gerald Everett involved as kind of a third receiving threat. Obviously, they spent their top draft pick last year on a receiver in Dee Eskridge. I don't know that really came together enough to just, you saw obviously DK Metcalf go through some phases of not being as involved as he could have been. And I think that's, I think if you had another really significant big play receiver that you could get to make it, a top three kind of thing there with those guys, I think that would be another thing.
Yeah, it certainly would, Bob. And one of the things that I was curious to get your impressions on is you did have that press conference with Pete Carroll. You did have press conferences with the players. I want to go with the players first. What was the overall sentiment or big takeaways that you had walking away from those player exit interviews that happened on Monday?
Well, I think it was that. I think that there's a little bit more optimism maybe than I think people might have thought, just because of the way they did in the season. And now obviously there can be some, recency bias there, and they came off what really was their best win of the year, down at Arizona, and, coming back the way they did from some, twice coming back from just, giving Arizona two touchdowns and giving Arizona a lead and coming back from that, what's a pretty raucous environment in that building and everything, and winning that game. So, when you talk to those guys, say 12 hours after the game or 15 hours after the game, that was the general, the general assessment. Now, most of the guys we talked to, the new world of Zoom, we sort of just got guys who they gave us on Zoom. And I think every single one of them is someone who can be a free agent. So, the tenor from every single guy that we talked to was also just sort of that, and what is their situation going to be. And, they all said they hope to be back, but, you never know for sure this time of year what's going to happen. But, I do think the general feeling, among the bulk of the players was that, the way they played at the end of the year, granted, there's, it's bittersweet because you wish you did that earlier in the year and you were in the, you were preparing for the playoffs, but, that if you just switch two of the, five games they lost by 3 points or less, that's what they'd be doing right now, and they'd be, one of the hottest teams going into the playoffs and a team that nobody would want to play.
Hey, heading back to free agency quickly, Ian Rappaport saying about 3 hours ago that Quandre Diggs underwent successful surgery to repair that dislocated ankle and broken fibula, expected to have a 4 to 5 month recovery, which would put him in line to return, near training camp or kind of when things get underway, but certainly miss a big chunk of the offseason. He's set to be a free agent. Bob, how do you gauge Seattle's interest in bringing him back, and how much might it cost?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interest. I think the way that they finally saw the secondary come together at the end of the year, I think they would like to try to keep as much of that together as they can, because that was one of the things that really hurt this team this year was kind of the secondary play at the beginning of the season, and just, trying to, finding new roles for guys sort of, with what they were doing with Jamal Adams, and then, the cornerback spot, everything coming to a head after the Minnesota game, and basically just benching and then trading or getting rid of, waving Trey Flowers, and after having decided to trade Akilah Witherspoon and, all of that. And so I think, now that they've sort of identified what they feel like can be a good secondary going forward, I think they'd like to keep it together. And Quandre is, was really the most valuable part of that, being the guy that you just could really count on in the back end of that to get everybody in the right spots and not get beat to, they really cut down the number of big plays they gave up as the year went on. And that's another thing, that's really Quandre's main responsibility. So I think they for sure would like to It's interesting. I was just writing a little thing on that and, you know, looking at the Pro Football Focus and their evaluations and over the cap and Spotrac and some of these guys. And, you know, the general thought seems to be $8 to $9 million a year. You know, he made about $6.2 million, I think, on his, on the contract that he signed with Detroit in 2018 that Seattle inherited, and, you know, coming off having been to the Pro Bowl now a couple times. And, you know, with the idea probably that the injury won't be a factor, you know, I don't think, you know, hopefully by March, that'll for sure be cleared up from his standpoint. If there's, you know, just teams will probably want to take a look at him, and, you know, any other team anyway would probably want to take a look at that and, you know, just get their own view of it probably and take a, you know, do all that. But assuming that's not a factor, you know, that seems to be the going rate there. They're probably, you know, somewhere in that $8 to $9 million range.
Yeah, that'll be definitely interesting to see how that unfolds for him. And the other part of it, Bob, is that, you know, a huge emphasis that Pete Carroll made was saying, hey, we want to resign all of our guys back, or not all of them, but a huge chunk of them that we think can really be, you know, solutions to, you know, us getting back to our winning ways next season. A lot of significant starters on that list of potentially re-signing back. So how much room would they have for additions, outside additions for free agency, if they are going to sign back a huge chunk of their impending free agents?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting hearing Pete say on his Monday show, you know, that money will go a lot more quickly than you think it will. You know, they've got about $52 million in sort of actual cap space, but maybe about $40 million in the effective cap space, which means, you know, once you sign up to 51 players, the amount that you sort of really have, they can, you know, you can always create some by doing some things. Maybe this is a year that if they, you know, if you talk about what the organization might do change wise, the one thing they might do is just decide to do a little bit more of let's just play for 2022, because especially in terms of the cap, they have always been very, mindful of sort of the big picture and the long term. And, you know, you've never really seen them want to do a lot of the restructures like a lot of other teams do to sort of push back cap space to future years, you know, because they've always just wanted to feel like no year is more important than, you know, what, you know, this year is more important than maybe 3 years from now it could be. Maybe they would take a little bit different of approach that way this year in free agency and go ahead and do some things like that and, you know, really take a run for it, you know, next year. You know, say like, you know, we found some things at the end of the season. Russell will be, you know, turns 34 next year. So it's, you know, there's no time like now to try to put together the best team we can for the immediate instead of, you know, maybe always worrying so much about, you know, as well about the long term. You know, and in their complete defense, that's been a successful strategy, right? I mean, they averaged 11 wins the previous 3 years before this year. It's hardly been, you know, not, you know, they've hardly been doing a bad job at that. But if, you know, if your goal is we really need to, you know, get back and make a real playoff run again. And, you know, the NFC looks as wide open, you know, with just all, you know, a lot of aging quarterbacks that you don't know what's going to happen with a lot of these guys in their futures. You know, there is no time like now. So that would be the thing there. So, you know, I think with cap space, it wouldn't surprise me if they did some things to try to be maybe a little bit more present day thinking in what they do this year.
From cap space to the draft, Pete Carroll was asked about the last 5 years that they've had. And he said, I mean, I don't know what else he's going to say, but he said he likes their creative approach. He likes some of the pieces that they have, pointed to Daryl Taylor as one example. What do you make of, or how would you evaluate, Bob, their last several draft classes?
Well, their problem is always going to be is their first three draft classes are about as good of a 3-year run as any team in NFL history has had. So it's never going to look probably as good in comparison. It's just really hard to always continue to live up to that. Certainly, I think they hit a little bit of a lull period there in you know, kind of the, you know, some of those classes and the, you know, 13, 14, you know, 15 depth wise anyway. There's some of those you can look at and be like, there should have been a few more, maybe just kind of regular solid contributors in some of those. And maybe you hit on another guy or two that becomes a Pro Bowl type player. You know, the last couple classes, certainly as this year went on, started to look a lot better with the way Jordan Brooks progressed, the way Daryl Taylor obviously progressed. You know, Damian Lewis, you know, looking like a legit kind of NFL guy for another year. You know, you really need to get more out of the 2021 class going forward. And there's not much there, obviously. I mean, it's just three guys. But, you know, Trey Brown looked like he was becoming a real player. D. Eskers is going to be a guy they really are going to need to take that next step next year. You know, so it's kind of hard to judge that one. And just the fact it's three players will always be difficult to probably judge that one too much by regular draft standards. But, you know, I think it's the last couple of years, I think, have turned out to be maybe a little bit better, you know, when you look at this year as a whole, than maybe you thought at times over the past year or two.
He is Seattle Times Seahawks reporter Bob Condotta. Make sure you're reading his work at seattletimes.com. His latest is right up there on the sports front page. It's about Seahawks safety Quandre Diggs, looking at the surgery he just had, the recovery time, and obviously his future in Seattle. So make sure you check that out at seattletimes.com. Thanks so much, Bob.
Okay. Thanks, you guys. Yep, anytime.
See ya.
Thanks,
this
Bob.
Hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Let's get to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
Jake, why do you think there needs to be a new voice leading the defense for the Seahawks heading into next year?
Well, just being straight up, they have been, although you could point to individual talent, they have been stagnant. They have not progressed in any serious way in terms of the identity of what their defense is. What is their hallmark? What is the thing that you can lean your hat on? That you can really make sure that you're saying this is the staple of our defense, right? This is something that our pass rush is the thing that makes us great. Our pass defense makes us great. Our run-stopping ability is what makes us great. There isn't a real definitive aspect that I believe that they're going to build off of going into this next season. And I believe that ultimately that is why you continue to have problems going into the start of every single year, is you really don't know truly your identity. You don't know how everything's going to come together and formulate. You know, the perfect example is their pass rush of this last year. 2020, they finished on a high note, and then it was non-existent to start the season. And there were lots of things that they did schematically that were different from what they did from the 2020 season. Why? It was successful. And they have continued to make tweaks and adjustments as the season has gone on. And I believe that those are, you know, stop gaps. That's patchwork. An excellent job by Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. to do that as the season progresses. But you got to start faster, and you have to start building towards something. There's nice pieces with Daryl Taylor, Jordan Brooks, you know, Jamal Adams. You hopefully get Quandre Diggs back. Did I mention DJ Reed? DJ Reed, if you can get him back, there are pieces there that you can look at and feel like, hey, we've got the talent to really get this done. You know, we're unsure about Bobby Wagner's situation, but we have to start building a clear identity as to who this defense is, and therefore now you can start really getting better and progressing from the beginning of the season all the way through to the end.
Second down. What's the main reason why you insist that changes are needed to the Seahawks organization?
Well, I really truly feel that Joe Fan, on with Mike Salk yesterday, really explained this well in terms of just why I've been so insistent that there needs to be change within this organization. Cut number five.
If you look at the last three, four seasons, and it's felt like pretty consistent regression. It feels like they've been outgunned personnel-wise. It feels like there's been moments where they've been outcoached, whether schematically or otherwise. You know, whether it's defensively with Ken Norton or offensively with Brian Schottenheimer or even earlier this year with Shane Waldron. You know, this hasn't felt like an ascending team for quite some time, and their results in the playoffs sort of indicate that.
So from a personnel standpoint, I really believe that you're looking at this Seattle Seahawks organization, and they've been stagnant. You've heard me talk about it over and over again. It feels like they are a organization that is like a truck that is stuck in the mud and they can't get themselves out of it. They're just spinning their tires and their wheels and they can't get out of the mud. And that's what it's felt like. It's felt like that for the last, you know, 4 years, to be honest with you, where they haven't really made any real significant steps forward into building themselves into a championship caliber team, a Super Bowl caliber team. And that is not a great position to be in. That's why I believe that there has been change needed within this organization to either get new eyes, a new voice on the roster, on the organization, or within, you know, certain aspects of defense, offense, you name it. And that to me is a reason why I want to see this organization. I don't want to see the people or the structure or the heads of everyone change. I don't want to see that. I just want to see a different approach going into this offseason that I do believe could lead to them personnel-wise getting towards the forefront of what's out there in the NFL rather than playing from behind and relying on your stars to play at their absolute, absolute best in order to give you a chance just to get into the playoffs.
Third down. What did we finally begin to see with Shane Waldron's offense toward the end of the season that made this group significantly better?
What you saw is you saw this offense really mold and mesh together extremely well. And yes, the running game was a huge aspect of that that really took off. But here in cut number 11, I think Mark Schlereth talked about this really, really well in terms of the illusion of complexity that is the staple of the Shane Waldron, Sean McVay style offense.
You know, it's the illusion of complexity. They're really, like, their whole running game, different personnel groupings, different motions, different, you know, formations, just all that stuff. And you're really running strong and, you know, mid zone and wide zone, strong and weak, and you're running a counter off of that, like either counter or power off of that. That's really all you're doing. It really becomes, you know, it boils down to about four running plays or five running plays total that you just run out of a bunch of different looks, a bunch of different window dressings, and all the play action that sets up off of that stuff. And when it comes together like that and you can execute, it's amazing how good you can look on the offensive side of the ball.
And it really is. And being able to run certain run concepts, being able to run your passing plays and be able to make it more unique in regards to your personnel, your pre-snap motion, the tempo that you're playing, and now you give this illusion of complexity of, wow, they're running all these different things. They're going at a speed and a rate that we just can't keep up with. What are they doing that's making this so difficult? Well, it's not anything different. They're just doing it from different personnel groupings, different ways to get to the same plays, and that to me is when you're really firing on all cylinders, that's what your offense is going to look like. And you really started to see that come together at the end of the season. And that is something that I'm really going to be looking forward to seeing them build off of heading into year two of this offense with Shane Waldron. I just believe it's going to get better and better.
Okay, last question. Fourth down. Got to be a quick one here. When it comes to the Seahawks re-signing free agents, which players are no-brainers?
Well, I really view this as there are six no-brainers in terms of the Seahawks wanting to re-sign players. My six no-brainers: Rashad Penny, Dwayne Brown, Quandre Diggs, DJ Reed, Gerald Everett, and then the wild card that people might not think is a no-brainer, Rasheem Green. Those are the names that I would be really working hard if I'm the Seattle Seahawks on trying to re-sign. After that, it is evaluating the market. It is evaluating where everybody else stands, but I'm not going to overextend myself trying to get the other impending free agents back on this roster. Those six that I just mentioned, I think the Seahawks are going to work really, really hard to get them back into a Seahawks uniform, and I think that they would be very smart in doing so.
All right, a great moment from Rob Gronkowski, who was mic'd up for the Bucks over the weekend. Plus, Ja Morant refused to high-five a kid, and I love it. I'll tell you why next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacy. This is how it works. We read you the top stories you're going to see on your own Twitter timeline. So if you see George McCaskey trending or Ja Morant or Rob Gronkowski and you have no idea, well, that's exactly what we're going to tell you about right now. So this hour, by the way, of Jake and Stacey, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We're going to have Mina Kimes join us at the top of the hour. We're also going to talk about that Michael Silver tweet, see what might be happening with Pete and John, though none of us expect either of those guys to be on the move in Seattle. But let's get to the timeline. George McCaskey's cringeworthy press conference. That was the topic that I wanted to get to today. And I mentioned it in the open when we were talking about being a fly on the wall in a conversation between Jody Allen and Pete Carroll. Why? Because I really, really hope that Seattle never finds itself in an ownership position that the Chicago Bears has with Chairman George McCaskey having just a nightmarish press conference. So he starts by comparing Matt Nagy's son getting booed at a football game, which isn't okay, not endorsing that, to Parker, the son of the late ESPN reporter Jeff Dickerson. Here it is.
Parker Dickerson is about the same age as Matt Nagy's sons. An NFL head coach understands and accepts that he'll be subjected to a fair amount of criticism and that, unfortunately, some of it will be personal. Coaches' children do not strike the same bargain. What Matt's oldest son was made to endure at a high school playoff football game is shameful and inexcusable. All he wanted to do was play a game he loves with his friends.
Did he need to bring up the 11-year-old son of an ESPN reporter who recently passed? Absolutely not. No, he did not need to do that. I have no idea why he did that. It's this weird kind of effort to, like, shield yourself when you're going to chastise people for booing a child. Like, there's literally no reason to bring Parker Dickerson into this conversation whatsoever. He also, George McCaskey, said that decisions about who they hire as head coach are going to be made in part by Bill Polian, who, you know, storied history in the NFL. But also, I don't know that I want someone who thought Lamar Jackson would be a better wide receiver making decisions about exactly who I hire to oversee my quarterback. And also, he said that it wouldn't be necessarily a deal breaker if a head coach didn't share their belief in Justin Fields, who they traded a future first rounder to trade up and acquire in this past year's draft. And also, there's this really weird back and forth that's happening now in Chicago where former Chicago Bears offensive lineman, gosh, I always mispronounce his name, Olin Krutz.
He's a Husky.
Olin Krutz.
How can a Husky not No.
Olin Krutz.
There you go.
He's won the Bears, it's like their Walter Payton Award, like the Brian Piccolo Award. He's won it, what, 4 or 5 times? Like, clearly a storied career with the Bears, but also a well-respected player. He said that basically the Chicago Bears offered him, like, minimum wage to come in and, like, help out with coaching. And he was like, wait, what? Like, right, who wouldn't see that as disrespectful? He's like, I've done so much for this team. What do you mean you're disrespecting me by offering me minimum wage to help with the job?
There are people without work experience that would turn down that kind of salary.
So then George McCaskey is asked about it and all but calls Olin a liar. Says he takes anything he would say, Olin says, with a grain of salt. What are you doing? What are you doing? If nothing else, just say, you know what? Like, I'll have to look into that. Let's say that Olin is lying. You just, I have to look into that. I'll have to see what that's about. It's just, it's the worst. I don't know who his PR team is, but they're doing an awful job. And they need to tell him to just walk away from the mic.
Well, they clearly his PR team doesn't have anything to
Have
any effect
like him.
On him. They probably don't like him because who's going to tell him to go and say those things? Nobody. And the thing is that with an organization that is in dire straits, what you want is you want to hear your owner be committed to finding the answer. You want your owner to be committed in terms of understanding what the weaknesses are of the organization and how you can address it and how you can move forward, and not by, you know, chastising fans, not by, you know, making an awful comparison, a horrendous comparison of Matt Nagy's son, who that situation was awful. It was bad. But it's completely out of place, out of context of what this press conference is about. And then to bring in somebody who just lost their parents, bring that kid in to equate it, I mean, it's just awful. It's just so bad. It just so tone deaf. And then to cap that off, you're not making yourself any friends within, you know, the alumni of the Chicago Bears. And then you go on and say that it doesn't matter if the next coach you bring in believes in Justin Fields. I'm sorry. That is the only answer.
Yeah.
That is the only
job that
you have.
That would be my one requirement.
Is to find somebody that's going to get the best and the most out of Justin Fields, and that is the key to making your organization, your franchise, good again. That's it. End of story. And clearly this guy has no idea how to run a football team, has no idea what it's going to take to be able to make that organization very, very successful. I was just in shock of the things that were coming out of his mouth at this end-of-year press conference.
I am telling you guys, all eyes have been on Jacksonville following the firing of Brian Flores. All eyes were on Miami. What's happening in Chicago, low-key, it's just a hot mess. Keep your eye on it. It's one of the weirder situations and more, I don't know, it made me angry for some reason. It fires me up. All right, next story here. Ja Morant refused to high-five a kid. Why? Well, he explains it.
After the last bucket, you got Drew the foul, and you go into the stands, and there's a little kid wearing a Warriors
jersey. Disrespectful with that jersey on.
He was say that again?
He was disrespectful with that jersey on.
You no mercy for the little kid.
Nah. We in Memphis. It looked like he wanted to cheer, but he had that jersey on. I apologized to him, but in that moment, bro, take the jersey off and then dap me up.
Do you expect him back? You want him back in a Grizzlies jersey next time?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Somebody find, you know, his information. You know, I sent him one myself.
First of all, that's very nice. That kid was wearing a Steph Curry jersey, by the way. Refused to give him a high five. He said no. Absolutely not.
That's hilarious. Look, it's a little kid. It's it is something that you know, everybody's going to look at and say, well, why wouldn't you give the high five to the kid? You must be a terrible person. Like, come on, man. But as an athlete, I'm not going out of my way to go and dap up anybody, kid or not, if they're in a different jersey. Like, it's just a natural reaction to have. And I'm sorry, sometimes fans with it, even with the jersey on, are so annoying that you don't even want to go over there and dap them
like
up. So I don't believe Ja Morant for a second. I actually really like it. And, you know, following up with, hey, if he wants to come, I would love to have him back in the arena. I'll give him a jersey myself.
I thought that
you
was
know, there was
nice.
There was an awesome, fun-loving way to end his comments about that. But it's real. Like, I'm sorry. If you're in another if you're in another team's jersey, you're in our home arena, I'm probably not even paying attention to you, let alone looking at you and then being like, yeah, no, I'll dap you up. You're in another you're in another team's jersey.
All right, we knew that next story here that Tom Brady had to find Rob Gronkowski to help him out because if he got one more catch, I think it was seven catches, he got a $1 million bonus. Well, it turns out Mike Gronk was mic'd up for that moment. Take a listen.
Sure, I need one more. Yeah. If I don't get the seventh catch, I have to go get a real job.
All we got to see is Gronkowski get his catch here.
What does that mean? Cha-ching. Gronkowski has his catch bonus.
Tom, good pass, dog. Thanks,
yeah,
thank you. Thank you, dog.
You got a milli?
Yeah, I got
you
a milli.
You got a milli?
Oh, I got a milli. We going. Where are we going?
To the city.
Yeah, we going milli.
Rob Gronkowski's laugh.
laugh.
Once a wildcat,
his
always
His laugh is too, is bear
down.
Too much.
Bear down. That's absolutely
too much.
Right.
Could you imagine?
Constant. Oh, getting $1 million with that. I love people being like, what's AB think about this moment?
Oh, man. Who knows? I mean, honestly, who cares? I mean, he's according to him, he doesn't care. He's rich. He's fine. He's, you know, he's doing better things than being with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, the guy is just, man, out of control.
I like to think that Gronk is just going to use that $1 million to buy like a Slurpee machine.
Like a pool in his house that's filled with like, I don't even know, White Claws or whatever it would be. Just something really stupid.
You're probably right. But, you know, the funny thing about guys like Rob Gronkowski, it's the same thing with Marshawn Lynch, is like they know how to play their personality to their strengths. And they're also very smart individuals, where Marshawn Lynch never used a single check of his actual money that he earned, you know, during his playing days, and used all the money that he had from endorsements, and has saved a lot of money and has made a lot of great business moves in his life. And he has set himself up. I view Rob Gronkowski very much the same way. But gosh, he is such a he's such a lovable meathead, right? Like that's the total you know, persona of Rob Gronkowski. And I couldn't imagine. If you're a teammate, you're like, hey man, what are we doing? Like, let's figure this out. Were we going to eat? Are we going out? Like, you're paying, right? I would definitely be trying to mooch off of that.
All right. Two really awesome people is who you're going to hear from coming up. So first, Matt Hasselbeck. He was on with Mike Salk this morning for the Matt Hasselbeck Show, which is every Wednesday. So he talked about the Seahawks' end to the season, and his his statement about how fans should feel about it was surprising to me. I'll play it for you guys. And then following that, at the top of the hour, ESPN's Mina Kimes is going to join us. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
The Matt Hasselbeck Show is every Wednesday on with Mike Salk. Now, Curtis, remind me, is that just during the Seahawks season, or are they going to keep doing it? I got to ask Mike about that.
I mean,
it's awesome. Either way,
I don't want to commit to anything here, but I
look,
would,
I make no promises.
I can guarantee you this. It's going to go through the Super Bowl.
Okay. Okay. Well, I will say this.
Anything
also,
beyond that,
I make no promises.
Don't kill the messenger.
Make
here.
No promises, but I will say, fine.
That's a very busy man.
And I will say also that at least was on for sure. For sure today. In fact, earlier today. So Matt Hasselbeck was talking with Mike Salk about the end of the season and how fans should feel about it. And he said something really interesting. I'm just going to play it for you. Okay. Then we'll talk about it. I'm just going to play this. Here we go.
You got to have that day or that time where you live in reality and you also, you know, the facts are the facts. I mean, you could say the exact same thing as you could say, you know, we scored 10 points against the Rams. We lost to the third string quarterback in Chicago and a team that fired their coach. And then we beat Detroit with a backup quarterback. And then we beat Arizona. We look great, but this is also a team that lost four of their last five.
Well,
like,
all right.
They're in a downward spiral. So it's like, it's both.
Yeah.
Like, yes, the positivity, I'm all for it. It's a great way to finish strong. At the same time, like, this is the Seattle Seahawks. There's a championship sort of standard there.
Matt saying
Matt
that, look,
Hasselbeck,
positive,
stop being so negative.
Positive feelings about
don't
the Seahawks.
Don't be negative, Matt. I mean, you don't want to be mixed up with the likes of Stacey and Jake, who just are getting reamed over
at.
Here for saying the same thing. Like, it just, you got to be careful, Matt. You got to be careful of the company you keep because, you know, according to a lot
people
of people out
there,
I mean
you need to be
positive. We need to be a lot more positive about this situation instead of, you know, as Matt said, you got to live in reality a little bit too, and you can point to the positive things about what's gone on this season and really feel good about the way things ended and what can be, but also recognize that things have been bad and that this team has struggled this season and that there is some legitimate change that has to go on for this roster to truly compete at the highest level. Thank you, Matt Hasselbeck, for, you know, for being aboard. Holy smokes. I mean, it just was something I needed to hear that, Stacey, because for a little bit there, you and me, I mean, it feels like we've been on a giant island in this process. And I'm glad to, you know, hear Matt Hasselbeck kind of see this thing the way that we see it a little bit. That, look, there's plenty to be positive about. There's plenty to be excited about and be happy with the way things finish. But don't forget that this team's 7-10, and the standard is much, much, much higher than that.
Yeah, you know, you can yell and get mad, or you can be angry that people aren't as excited as you were by that finale. And you know what? It was a great season finale. I really enjoyed watching that game. It was really interesting to cover, and obviously the only bittersweet thing that made it bittersweet was Quandre Diggs' injury, which obviously added just a horrible spin on it. But otherwise, was a great day for Seattle. That being said, you look back at some stats or numbers that tell the story of this season. I think that looking at the final couple games and Penny's performance as, in some ways, what the team can be. It's who they were for four or five games, but maybe not who they always are consistently, is important. Like the third down numbers, they finished 37%. That's not worse than the league. It's like 20, I don't know, third or something like that this year. Okay. But here's what's really important. On January 1st, so heading into those final couple games or kind of, you know, heading into the last week or so, they were by like week 15 or 14, 32nd instead of 23rd. So like don't overlook that, like finishing the season strong is a good thing. And getting the positivity entering the offseason and momentum entering the offseason is a good thing. Rashad Penny doing what he did is a good thing. But don't overlook areas where they really have to improve. They genuinely have to improve because that's not their standard. You are telling me that Pete Carroll is completely fine being 27th in the league on third down? No, he's not.
100%. And that is why you can't let emotion, you can't let emotion drive the overall narrative and conversation of where this team is at. You can't do that, or else you're never going to truly improve. And that's why, you know, listening to Pete Carroll say that they are really close to being a championship caliber team, that's why I just don't I just don't agree with that. I believe that they are far away from it right now, and there are opportunities to where they can significantly improve and get themselves back into the conversation, because they do have Russell Wilson as their quarterback. They do have nice pieces around them with DK and Tyler, and you've got Jamal Adams, you've got Daryl Taylor, Jordan Brooks, you've got Bobby Wagner on your roster as of right now. You've got nice pieces around you that you can shape your roster into becoming a championship caliber team. But if you run this whole thing back with this roster again, like you elected to do 12-4, you're going to find yourself in a very similar position. Why? Because I said before, it means that your star players have to be perfect. They have to play perfect in order for you to just get a chance to get into the playoffs. You want this to be a playoff caliber team that when your star players play at their best, this is a Super Bowl caliber team. That's the difference. And right now, this roster as a whole is not a playoff caliber roster just on its own. And that is why with Matt Hasselbeck saying what he said, Stacey, it is music to my ears, because that is reality. That is the truth of where this team is at. And the exciting thing is that there are plenty of moves that they can make and areas that they can address to get them right back into the thick of things.
All right. Well, speaking of playoffs, the Seahawks, unfortunately, not part of those teams. But the Rams are. They brought a big name out of retirement. A bit surprising there. That's coming up at 12:30 with NFL headlines. Before we get to that, though, ESPN's Mina Kimes is going to join us next for a look at where the Seahawks franchise is heading into 2022. Don't go anywhere.